Well, joining us for his regular chat, it's Mr. Ken Bates. Morning, KB.
Morning, Darren.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good, good.
Recovering from a hard day of watching Wimbledon.
It was spectacular, wasn't it? What a day's tennis.
Been absolutely fantastic. And then, of course, we had the Welsh Revolution last night.
Yeah, we'll come on to that and get your thoughts on Wales in the Euros. Let's start with Leeds United. Let's start with Lucy Ward, because it's come out that the former welfare officer has been awarded more than £132,000 in the unfair dismissal and sex discrimination case she had against Leeds United.
Yes, and I gather they've got to pay £55,000 in tax and her costs as well, of course, of their own. I'm glad the matter's over. Lucy shouldn't have been treated the way she was, but that's history now. I'm just sorry it's taken so long for it to be resolved, because must put terrible stress on her and the uncertainty at the club, and that sort of thing hanging around doesn't give a great atmosphere among other employees at the club. But still, and also, of course, if they settled it earlier, I'm quite sure it could be done a lot cheaper than what it's actually cost the club. But what's done is done, and we're moving on.
Certainly are moving on.
Coming out of the club now is looking very positive.
Well, yeah, coming on to that, KB, because, I mean, there's been a lot of movement of players in the last week or so. They've signed the Sporting Lisbon forward, Hadi Sacko, on a season-long loan. That's on top of the arrivals of Marcus Antonsson, Carl Bartley, and then we've learnt today that Matt Grimes has joined Leeds United on a season-long loan from Swansea, and Rob Green, former West Ham player, has joined on as a goalkeeper. And there could be a striker being signed today as well. So there's some positive things coming out of Elland Road at the moment.
Yes, well, I think the impression I got, obviously, as an onlooker, is that Massimo has sorted his mind out now and probably has got rid of a lot of people who were giving him so-called advice in their best interest rather than Leeds. And I think he's had a clear out of those, and he now appears to have a more professional staff around him. So hopefully things will be a lot more positive now, and Leeds can get on with the job of getting in the top six, the top two, and getting him back into the Premiership. So all things looking good.
Yeah, you're quite right. I mean, Massimo does seem like he's sort of getting things sorted. He's having some dealings with GFH at the moment. Those are ongoing, you would imagine.
Well, I think they're probably coming to a head. They've had two board meetings which are supposed to have funding for next season, and they haven't, of course, because GFH couldn't come up with any money because they haven't got any. But it really asks the question, what are those two directors doing on the board? Well, I know why they're on the board, but I'll tell you that in a minute. The important thing is they should be got rid of, because you get a bad reputation by the company you keep. And with GFH still being a shareholder, and more importantly having two directors on the board who don't contribute anything, unless I suspect the occasional expense invoice, and I hope they get treated the same way as GFH treated everybody else's expenses in their time. Let's get rid of them, have a clean sweep, start again. Maybe there's one or two Yorkshiremen who could be encouraged to join the club or join the board, and then bring on some local knowledge and advice and experience, which would be helpful to Elland Road and make Massimo not feel quite as lonely as I know he does sometimes, some days. Now, the reason we want to get rid of GFH's got a problem. They haven't got any money. They originally bought Leeds United thinking, you know, the fool's gold of the Premiership and all the rest awaited, and that would sort out their precarious bank, because obviously, if they own a club or business, you could get up to £100 million a year from TV and sponsorship rights and put it into a smallish bank to forget how they describe themselves. Smallest bank is the right word. Then obviously bolster their balance sheet, put up their share price, make them feel them good, and give a high profile in the Arab world, where of course it's all about pride and perception and boasting, to put it bluntly. They didn't have the money. I'm repeating myself, they didn't have the money. They couldn't even pay the wages 3 months after buying the club. And they just concerned just cutting costs. So they didn't have to find the money they hadn't got. And I've got the infamous email which Patel and Hisham sent to David Haye, telling him, instructing him to try and find out as much dirt as he could on Gwyn Williams and particularly Sean Harvey, so he could get rid of him and not avoid paying his bonus and his contractual obligations as cage of a turnout takeover. That's the kind of scumbags they were. Well, they still are. And apparently then they try to persuade Massimo to buy their shares, to need the cash. And Massimo was telling me recently that he did a deal with them. They came back the next day, wanted more money. So he settled that one, came back and wanted that much more money, so he just told them to get stuffed. And a little anecdote about Patel. He used to have a driver called Mr. Bell, who used to act as my taxi driver when I was in Leeds. And of course, when the Arabs took over, that introduced them all to him. We introduced him to them. And on one occasion, Salim Patel, hired the driver, take him down to Heathrow for some unknown reason. He's going to get a plane back from Heathrow to Bahrain and didn't want to take the train. The next time I met my driver, he said to me, Mr. Bates, he said, that Mr. Patel is not interested in Leeds United at all. It's all about him. I said, well, why do you ask? He said, well, the drive took 4 hours. He was on the phone all the time on all the conversations about him. Had he been seen on Twitter in his shirt? Had he been seen on Twitter in the director's box? Had he been seen the other? He said he just seemed obsessed with himself. I said, well, to be fair, you have to remember that he's of mixed race. He's half Pakistani and half Indian, born in East London, was a late convert to Muslim, to Islam, and of course all converts are workmost fanatics. I said, and he's the man that wanted to introduce Sharia law into Allen Road and ban alcohol for the fans. Of course that died ever. So the driver, who's an Indian, speaks with a Yorkshire accent, gave a big grin and said, that sums it all up then, doesn't it? And it does. GFA going, I think they've got financial problems. They're trying to sort their mess out. They put very little money into Leeds. And that's why the club left so many problems behind for Massimo to sort out. And it's taken him, you know, his third year sorting them out. I think we're coming to the end of the road now. So let's get rid of those two Arabs. They've got their own problems at home anyway, in Bahrain. Political problems. Let's get rid of them. Maybe it gets on with Leeds United. Good luck to Massimo. He tells me you're taking a fortnight break home this month, so that he'll come back refreshed. But of course, like all chairman presidents, he'll be on his mobile 24 hours a day.
Okay, B, let's Just keeping with football, let's move on to Wales. Crashing out of Euros last night, going down 2-0 to Portugal. But a fantastic run, and the whole of Wales should be exceptionally proud of how that team's done over the course of the last, the last year or so.
They should indeed. In fact, I thought yesterday, though they did play well against Portugal, one of the best country teams in the world, but I thought, in fact, they went off the boil a bit last night. They laid back and let Portugal play the possession game, whereas in previous games, Wales has gone hard at the opposition, closed them down, rather like Leicester City, and Iceland did in their good run in the World Cup as well. But what a great team, what a great spirit. And all those fans there, serving all the way, in spite of, would you believe, the French air traffic control strike, which meant tremendous disruption to the ordinary fans who probably spent fortunes trying to get there. But it was all rewarded. Okay, they didn't win. It's a pity. Interesting, though, towards the end, the first half, both teams had three shots on goal, and Wales had the only one on target. The goal by Ronaldo, we have to acknowledge, was brilliant. Marvellously timed header. The second one, I thought a bit lucky deflection if it wasn't offside. But on the other hand, you know, Wales sort of knocking about and trying to dribble instead of passing more quickly. But I thought, even at two down, I thought they might have pulled it back, but they didn't. But nevertheless, congratulations to them. Great team, good work ethic. And a great tribute to Coleman, Chris Coleman, who I know all in football, admire him tremendously. And watch the way he gives his press conferences compared with Hodgson giving his. Hodgson was a miserable sounding, as if he just missed the funeral of his mother-in-law, whereas Coleman was inspiring all the time. And I can imagine that the difference between the two camps. And I think he sums it up when the players couldn't, the English players couldn't go to the Somme to pay tribute to the 100th year. Could be too tiring for them, too depressing to do me a favour. Is that the spirit that made Britain great? But getting back to Wales, totally plead for them. Of course, the joke now is everybody in there trying to find a Welsh ancestor to prove that they're really Welsh.
Moving away from football, KB, and to probably the big news of yesterday was the Chilcot report and Sir John Chilcot outlining his findings on the UK's involvement in the 2003 Iraq War and the lessons that should be learned from it. It was an interesting day for Sir John Chilcot and for Tony Blair yesterday.
Well, I mean, we've all known the real reason for years. And he just about summed out Tony Blair yesterday. There was a photograph in the papers yesterday showing him getting out of his bulletproof vehicle accompanied by his 18-stone bodyguard. A nice big smile on his face as if he hadn't got cared in the world. Not very respectful, I don't think, to the people, the parents of the survivors. But you know, I think Blair was somewhere up certain part of Mr. Bush's anatomy and basically just a poodle, did anything that Bush wanted. And I think that Bush gave him his reward, probably helped him. All those funny little consultancies he's got all around the world now. And one of the funniest, of course, about Blair was he made him peace envoy to the Middle East. Since then, we've had war in Libya, Syria, Lebanon, Kurdistan. How the hell? I think it sums up where Labour went wrong when he and his mob took over, hijacked the Labour Party. They're the ones that started mass immigration. So the theory was, we've got enough immigrants in, they'd all vote Labour, and they have power for years, because none of you would vote Tory. But it also makes the comment more seriously. It turns out as police, as soldiers, some weren't particularly well trained, they were ill-equipped, didn't have proper backup, and they had no plans. As an American guy who fought very hard to help the Afghanistanis, when they went in after the went out, he said, "We won the war and lost the peace." I don't believe we have a special relationship with America. America are our trading partners. They don't have friends or enemies. And Blair, basically, was just a poodle and did whatever Bush wanted. "I am with you all the way." But before it came out, the facts were frightening. When there were no WMDs, we know that now. The cabinet were not kept properly informed. It was like a kitchen cabinet of Blair and his cronies, and Alastair Campbell and Mandelson, one or two carefully selected members, other civil servants. And they made the decision over a cup of coffee. And yet, the other members of the cabinet didn't ask the searching questions they should have done, or they should have resigned in protest. But I tell you something I think that sums up the Blairs very clearly. When we had the Falklands War, one of Her Majesty's sons, Prince Andrew, flew a helicopter gunship in Falklands. In Afghanistan, one of Her Majesty's sons, Prince Harry, served in the army. Where were Mr. Blair's sons? I'll tell you where they were. They went to university. Why did Mr. and Mrs. Blair send their sons to Iraq to lead by the front and demonstrate leadership? My memory of that time, if those people remember, there was a fuss about Mrs. Blair buying two flats, apartments, in West Bristol with the aid of an Australian con man who allegedly got her a discount or something. And I remember Mrs. Blair being questioned and snivelling live on TV saying, "You don't know how hard it is. Two sons are leaving home for the first time." Yeah, they left for university. Harry left for Afghanistan. What bloody hypocrites. And let's just hope that this will destroy any future Blair's got forever, unless someone can find some way taking off the ill-gotten gains he's already received over the last 15 or so years. And also, how about the Doctor of the Hutton inquiry? When those papers are going to be released? If you remember, there was a scientist who wrote a treatise who committed suicide. Yet apparently 20 eminent doctors examined him and said there's no way he could have committed suicide. And so the Hutton inquiry coming out, it's been buried for 70 years. Why? I think the government should reopen that inquiry and release the information. And we might find out that the man was murdered to keep quiet what he discovered, so that there was no reason for going to war.
Well, KB, as ever, always a pleasure to chat, and we'll catch up again at the same time next week.
So, going back, well done, Wales. Well done, Coleman. And well done, Monk, for starting to assemble what's hopefully going to be an exciting team. Come on, you Whites.